Ladies and gentlemen, give him a warm welcome, Peter Heemskout.
Good afternoon. For how many people has it been the third day? Tired yet? Probably all, huh? So, just this session and then another one, and then you can go home. Okay, cool. What I want to talk about is the new stuff in Windows Communication Foundation 4. So, who's been using Windows Communication Foundation 3? Actually, I might say, who has no experience with Windows Communication Foundation 3? Then, I'm sorry, then probably this session is not going to show you what WCF is about. I'm just going to show you the new stuff. So you can still triple out if you want, but I hope to be able to show you some stuff. Okay. So what I want to talk about is mainly a lot about the new stuff in WCF is actually less. It means less configuration. We're going to talk a little bit about routing, discovery, REST. Who's using REST? Come on. I don't see too many hands, okay? So I'll show you a couple of things that are new in WCF 4 for building REST services, and then I'll have a quick run-through with workflow services. Anybody saw my session on Workflow Foundation 4 yesterday? Well, there's going to be some overlap, but don't worry, I won't be spending too much time with that. Okay. So, the story is, you build something with WCF, and then you can deploy it in many different kinds of ways by just simply changing the configuration. Simply? Configuration in WCF is probably the hardest thing to do, right? Well, I think so. So Microsoft got from a lot of people saying, okay, couldn't you make this configuration a little bit easier for us to do? So they did their best. And it actually comes down to, if you want to, you can build a service with no configuration at all anymore, which also makes it easier to deploy, of course. You might still need to do a little bit of configuration, but then you can do it for all the services on your server, for example, again, which is easier. So how do they do that? Well, you can see that there's a list there of default things, default endpoints, default bindings, default behavior, and then predefined standard endpoints. All of these things are there to make it easier for us. So let's start with the beginning. Now, what if you create a service and you don't have a service configuration to describe your endpoints? What happens? WCF host will simply throw a little error saying, sorry, no endpoints, can't do anything for you. What they did in WCF 4 is when the service host actually starts and it cannot find any endpoints, it will just automatically add endpoints for you. How does it do that? It looks for each service contract and it looks for each kind of base address it can find, and then defines automatically an endpoint for the contract and that binding, automatically. You don't have to do anything for that. What it means is in IIS, your HTTP base address will automatically have for each, you will have an endpoint for each service contract you have. If you want to, you can also do that in your own host. How does it work? Well, there's a very simple method called add default endpoints. And if you want to, you can call it yourself. You might want to have a couple of endpoints. If there are endpoints in your host, WCF will not call this method automatically, but you can still do that. So, let's have a look at a very simple service. So what I have here is a really simple service. I hope the last row can actually read my code. Okay, thank you. But with these big screens. So there you have a simple host. I have two simple service contracts, actually IFU and IBAR, which have two simple methods. Actually, the service contract is really not important because they really don't do anything useful anyway. They're just here for the demo. But what I do here is I have a little console application which will start the service host and then will print out for each endpoint what is there. So if I run this host, after calling open, it's going to iterate over the service endpoints and it's simply going to show me what is the binding name, what's the address, and if it's a WSHTTP binding, I'm also going to show you what kind of encoding, message encoding it's using. So if I run this as is, and I need to show you another thing, no config file here. Actually, show all files, no config file here. There's an old one here, so I can, if I get into trouble, I can always use this one. But there's nothing here for configuration. So if I run this, what you'll see is I get four endpoints anyway. Like I said, I have two service contracts, IFU and IBAR, and I have two base addresses when I create my host. So it creates one for basic and one for NetTCP, one for IFU and one for IBAR. You can actually see they both have the same base addresses, but that's no issue. Okay. Now, what I can also do, of course, is to simply say, hey, host, I would like to have an endpoint. I could add a configuration, but I can also do that in Colder. And I can simply say, I would like to add a service endpoint. And then I get a bunch of overloads here, but I'm actually going to give it the type of, let's say, IFU, my contract. Let's take a binding, new WSHTTP binding, for example, and then some address, and that's going to be the empty string. Oh, no, let's take another one. Let's call this the secure endpoint, because I'm using WSHTTP, which is a more secure binding. By the way, they've also now added this new method, which makes it easier to add new endpoints as well. So if I run this one, now I simply get a single endpoint. WCF saw, hey, there are endpoints, so I don't need to do anything for you. Again, you can make this easier by simply saying, hey, I would like to have all these default endpoints, by the way. So I'm going to say add default endpoints. So if I run this now I have five different endpoints. By the way, if you look carefully, and I hope this is readable for everyone, what you see here is I have a WSHTTP binding, I have a basic HTTP binding, and an NetTCP binding. Why do I have these differences? Well, I have one base address looking at HTTP, and I have one base address at NetTCP. Well, what I want to look at now is in WCF, they will also determine from what kind of URI you have, from the kind of protocol you're using, they're going to have a default binding as well. So that's the next thing I want to discuss. So what we get in WCF now, because we need this, if you have a certain kind of protocol, we then have a default protocol mapping to a certain default binding. And by default, again, if you install .NET 4, Visual Studio 2010 4 from the ground up, nothing before that, you will get basic HTTP as the default protocol. If you want to, you can change that. You can always say, hey, I don't want to have basic HTTP. I would rather have, well, WSHTTP or some other kind of binding. So what you can do then is you can go back into configuration and change those things. You can actually remove the old binding and then replace it with another one. You can do this at any level. You can do this at your application level. You can do it at the site level or even in machine.config somewhere. Okay, let me show you how you can do that. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go back to my application and I'm going to make my endpoints, instead of making them use basic HTTP, I want to have all my HTTP endpoints to be using WSHTTP. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go here and add a new item, an application configuration file, app.config, and then I'm going to open this with the editor. Anybody like to type in their configuration by hand? I don't see many hands, but to be honest, there's still this really peculiar thing in WCF. If you go into Visual Studio, you can right-click on this app.config file, and then you would expect here to see the WCF editor. You still have to go here to Tools, start the editor. I'm going to kill it again, and then suddenly I get this menu here. I still do not understand why it works this way. Anybody who knows, come over and let me know. Okay, so I'm going to use the editor. Again, this little tool does not allow you to change the font, so what I need to do here is I need to go here for advanced, and then I can add my own protocol mapping. And as you see here, by default, this is what you see by default. What I can do is I can go to one of these bindings, double-click on it, and then change the default. So I can say, hey, I don't want to have any basic. I would rather have to have WSHTTP binding. And I can save it. And I'm going to save my file here. Save that one too. And I'm going to run this project again. So what we now see is the default endpoint which it added now automatically use stuff like WS HTTP. Now, another thing. Regularly, you have to change the binding configuration. So how can I do that? Since it's all default, can I change the default binding configuration? Of course I can do that. Again, I can go here to the configuration utility, and I just do what I always do. I go here for the bindings. I add my new binding configuration, WSHP binding, and then let's zoom in again. And I go here, and I simply change stuff like the message encoding. I'm going to make that MTOM. Okay. I'm going to give this a nice little name, Peters config. And then I'm going to go back to my protocol mapping. I'm going to edit this one again. I'm then going to change it to use my configuration. You can do that easily. Okay. Let's go out of this again. Save everything. And then run this one. And previously, you would actually see that at the end of the second line, you would see text. Now you see MTOM. By the way, you might be wondering, why didn't the first protocol now uses MTOM? Well, that's actually because in Corda, I'm still saying I want to use this binding with this kind of configuration. So this only works if you use plain old configuration. I can actually do more. What if I have many different endpoints like that, and I want to have everybody be using MTOM on many different services? I can also create what's called a default binding configuration. So let's go back here. A default binding configuration, well, if you create a binding configuration, you always have to give the name, right? And who here has never had it that you were like spending minutes or even hours debugging your binding because it didn't work the way you wanted to? And then at the end of the day, you notice that you forgot to select the binding configuration in your endpoint. Isn't that the moment when you feel a little bit silly? I do. I think everybody has had that once in a while. So what you can also do now is actually say, hey, I want to have my binding configuration, and I want to have everybody use this binding configuration. And what you do is you create a default binding configuration. And how would you do that? Well, you just drop the name here. So here, come on, mouse, you have a name. Oh, come on. Come on, why doesn't it want to work? Okay, let me do it like this then. Still getting, now I'm getting confused. Okay. So what you do here is you just drop the name. Now, if you have a binding configuration without the name, then WCF4 says, okay, this is the default. So what I can do here is I can just drop out. I can just create my WSHTTP binding, change any property I want, and that's the default from now on for anybody who is not using an explicit binding configuration. You have to be careful. So if you still use in your endpoint an explicit binding configuration, it will not stick. Again, let me show you very simply how you can do that. I'm going to go here. I can actually do this with the editor, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop this name. There's a binding configuration. Where's my binding configuration? Here it is. So I'm going to drop the name. I'm going to say everybody needs to use MTOM now. And then here, if I'm going to use my protocol binding, I'm also going to drop this. If I forgot to do this, I would probably get an error saying that I can't find the configuration or anything. But let's still try this. And now everybody's using MTOM. Again, watch out. The first line is not using MTOM because this one comes from Corda. So there, the configuration, the default configuration, does not apply. Where does that leave me with a greatly simplified configuration file to start with? But I can do that for even more. I can do that for other things. So I can also do that, for example, for behaviors. If you have 10 different services and everybody wants to have WSDL for those services, currently you have to add the metadata behavior to each service. What I can now do is I can simply say everybody has metadata. Everybody has debugging. Everybody has this kind of authentication and so on and so on. I can change that by creating a default service behavior. Again, how difficult is that? Well, you just create the service behavior and you omit the name. You don't give the name, and that's the default. Okay. What else? Who here uses Macs? metadata exchange. Okay. I always have trouble remembering the name of the interface, typing that in. Of course, I can use through the browser functionality, I can get there. But there are a lot of endpoints which are kind of standard things, Max endpoints. So Microsoft decided to give us standard endpoints. These are endpoints which you can just select, give me this kind of endpoint, and you get it with everything you want. There are a bunch of them, and the most, well, the one everybody knows is Max endpoint, but you can see there in the list there are others. There's, for example, endpoints specially made for discovery. We're going to look at discovery a little bit later. But you will also find, for example, the workflow control endpoint, an endpoint with an interface specifically built for starting and stopping workflows. And we'll get more of those later. So how do you select an endpoint like that? Well, now you just say, I would like to have an endpoint of kind, Max endpoint. So now you have a new kind attribute on your endpoint. If you use that, it automatically selects. By the way, it's smart enough to also select for you the appropriate binding. Okay. By the way, if you want to change there some stuff, you can do that too. So in your endpoint, you can say kind, and then you can also use an endpoint configuration, and there then you can change things. So for example, in this example, you get a UDP discovery endpoint, which is used for WS discovery, and then you can actually change the address where you want to be listening, for example. You can do that here too. Okay, let's have a quick look. What I want to do here is I would like to have a Max endpoint. So if I run my sample, I don't have a Max endpoint here yet. There's nothing here saying Max. So I'm going to change that. I'm going to add a new service, and I'm going to do that again using, well, a little bit more handy tool, WCF configuration. So I'm sorry, again, small font. I'm going to change this a little bit. I'm going to browse to my service. So this is the service I want. Oops. Oh, yeah. That's me playing around too much with beta stuff. So I'll have to stick it in here anyway by hand. So there's the service model. Let's have a service. And for this, I really love IntelliSense. So I have my service here. Let's give that a name. And the name of my service is, well, it's FooBar service. And let's not forget the namespace. So, and then what I want to do now is to add an endpoint. And I can simply say kind is Max endpoint. And I hope I got that right. Didn't have any typos. So if I run this, looks like I have an error. Okay, now for that, that's why you have a little backup scenario where you can then copy. Oh, it's not in here. Yeah. Okay, let's have a look what's wrong here. Builds. I'm not going to look for this too long. You get the idea, by the way. It says here, oh, okay, I made it out. I think I know what I forgot. It says, well, sorry, I can't give you this endpoint. I still need to add the behavior. So what I'm going to do here is going to open this one up now. I'm going to go back to my behaviors, service behavior. I'm going to add a new service behavior configuration. I'm going to remove the name, and I'm going to add a metadata debug, for example. Add this one, and then add another one for the metadata, and then just modify this a little bit. HTTP get, yes please, I would like that one too. Save, exit, wait for Visual Studio. And now I have this default behavior, and just to make sure, I'm going to remove the name. I'm really saying now all my services automatically get debugging support, HTTP get enabled, and maybe even full exceptions. That's one I like to do while I'm developing too. And now, still not. Okay. Count one, demo not working. I'll try to fix it maybe a little bit later. By the way, I don't worry. It's the last bit of this code I'm going to need anyway. By the way, once you have all these things together, it actually means we can go back in time. When we built ASMX Web Services, what did we need to do? We had a bit of code, and what we would do is we would just slap on that web method attribute, and then it would turn into an ASMX kind of web service. So there was no dirty configuration you needed to do. You didn't need to define a service contract. Some people are nostalgic for those days, and for some services, it's really not necessary to do all the work that, well, you normally do in a proper service, defining your service contract, defining your implementation, hosting, everything nicely side by side. So what you can do now is you can build an old-fashioned ASMX kind of web service with WCF. So just to show you how easy that is, let me show you. I'm just going to go for Visual Studio and create a brand new service project. So create a new project here. I'm going to create a WCF service. Nice and simple. And let's call that, looks like ASMX, like this. So what I get here is my old-fashioned service1.svc. I get a service contract. I don't need that. Delete. I actually get a service implementation here using C#. I don't need that. Delete. I'm actually going to put everything inside this .svc. So I'm actually going to rename it a little bit, because service one is no name for a service. So what shall we build today? Well, let's call it a hello service. Guess what? I'm going to build a hello world. So in here, I'm just going to go for the markup. And I'm going to tell it that I would like to have a little service here. And I'm going to call that hello service. And I'm not going to give that any code behind, because I don't have any code there. Well, not in a separate file. I'm just going to start writing here. So what I want to have is a system.serviceModel.serviceContract, public class hello service. And then in here, let's have a system.serviceModel. Operation contract. It looks like I'm a little bit confused, so let's solve that. Control dot again. Oh, yeah, I know what's going on. Strangely enough, I think I know what's going on. There's no system.service model here. Yes, there is. What's going on? Okay, I can't hear you. Anybody see something? I am missing an S. Sorry, I'm still not hearing. Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's easier when you're there. Still not okay, but let's... Let's try to solve that. System.serviceModel.operationContract. So let's have a little method here. String hello. Return hello world. Okay. Come on. After doing this kind of stuff, the next thing you would actually start doing is go for the configuration, right? I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to try to just run this, view in browser, and hope it's not going to give me some weird error. Still not complaining. It's not my day. I need to have square brackets right, and it's kind of dark in here again, so let's add those things. That should do the trick. Okay, I'll get there. Build, and run. Finally. Next time I'll just keep to the simple things. So now I get this little thing here. And I can actually test my service by going here for this tool, open up add a service, hit OK. Let's test my hello.
I also get metadata. I don't need to do anything for that. I can just hit invoke, and I get hello world. In case you're not believing me. Come on. Thingy. Hello world. So, of course, this is really easy. It's great if you want to build a very quick, simple service. How come this actually works? Well, actually, when you create a new service in WCF4, WCF4 always puts in your configuration just about this. That's about all you get. Well, to be honest, it also adds this stuff. See this little attribute? Multiple site bindings enabled. That's another feature from WCF, but it also requires the IES 7 or 7.5, which allows you to have a WCF service with multiple base address, like HTTP www.utu.be and HTTP utu.be and so on. So you can have multiple addresses there. By the way, I'm going to be using that a little bit later. Okay, now let's go back here to services. The problem, of course, is if you build a service like this, or any way you build a service, in WCF, if you deploy it in IIS, your service needs to end in .svc. And currently in .NET 3.5, you also have to deploy the .svc file to your server. So a lot of people find it inconvenient, and people who are doing REST definitely don't like the .svc. Now, for both of these things, there are solutions. What you can now do is you can deploy a service and give it another address. So you can change the endpoint to say, hey, instead of using helloservice.svc, I want you to use another .svc. The thing is, you still have to have that .svc in there. And then for the people who like to do REST, they definitely don't like to do the .svc. I'll talk about that in a second. Okay. So, let's have a quick look at the other thing. Now, if you want to have a service you can deploy without having to have the .svc, you just need to put this kind of stuff in your configuration. That you're actually saying is, well, when you see an address that ends in something like helloworld.svc, well, then actually call that service. Now, I already have helloworld.svc, so I'm going to change it a little bit more. In my code here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the web.config, edit it again, going to go here I'm going to go here for advanced, I'm going to go for hosting environment. And here, I can actually add my own service activation. Again, let me zoom in on that. So what you now get in WCF4 in the config tool, you get this hosting environment, service activations. And then here, you can add your new one. So let's just create a new one. I hope I won't make you sick by doing this. So I'm actually going to have my Hello World class. I think I called it Hello World. And I'm going to give this a new relative address. Any suggestions? Otherwise, I'm going to take Dada. .svc, anybody with children like 1 year old, then you get this kind of thing, hello world, but it's called Dada. So let's try this one. Let's save everything again. And close this. And I just want to double check for my own sanity again if I actually call this hello service. So it's called hello service. So let's go back here and I'm going to say, hey, when you see something ending in Dada, go for hello service. Right click. So let's go back to the browser. Let's change this address. Come on, let's change this address in dada.svc. Oops, still not working. Resource cannot be found. Am I doing something wrong? Okay, let's zoom out again. Let's try once more. Nope, did I make a typo? Relative address is data.svc, hello service, and the service in here. Is that going to be the second one? I don't like this. Okay, one more try. Let's save everything, or let's make sure I build it all. Right click, view in browser. Back to Dada. Now it works, and if I want to, I can again call it. So the thing about this demo is, I didn't throw away my .svc file because that would be very hard, because this way I would lose all my code But if your code would be in a separate assembly or just in a separate code file, you can just deploy your solution by just copying the library and just copying the web.config, and you don't need the .svc anymore. What if you want to get rid of the .svc extension? Well, for that, you can use ASP.NET routing. So in .NET 4, Microsoft decided to just take something which already exists, the routing of ASP.NET. So what you can do is you just add a routing table, and then you just do like in MVC. So if you've ever done that in MVC, by the way, I'll show you a little example of how to do that in WCF later, but it's really the same thing. Okay. Next thing, let's have a look at routing. Anybody ever built a routing service in WCF 3? No, I don't see anybody. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to build something which is a routing? Huh? It's actually a service where you go to, and that service simply delegates you to another service. I want to do that? Well, of course, it's a great way to add like extra security. Instead of having to configure all your services, you can just configure a single service. You can like use it as a bridge to go to other networks. A couple of days ago, somebody said, hey, I want to use REST to talk to that, but it doesn't seem to work. Well, what you can do is you can just use the routing to REST to change REST over the bridge going to somewhere else. It also allows you to do stuff like load balancing, like distribute work over multiple servers, and also make it easier to work with versioning. Now, the thing is, if you wanted to build your own routing, with WCF3, it wasn't easy. Maybe you saw samples on the web. There are people who have built very nice routing services. So Microsoft said, okay, there's definitely a need for that, so let's do it ourselves. What it basically comes down to is you just deploy a service which uses the built-in routing service. So you don't need to do anything for that. The only thing you have to do is you have to configure the routing service because you have to explain to it what goes where. So what you need to do is you need to explain to it what goes where, and you're going to do that by also adding, for example, an endpoint. And this endpoint has different, there are four standard interfaces you can use. For example, the iSimplex session router is typically the simplest one, which allows you to have request reply. But if you want to, you can also build something like an iDuplex session router. If you're going to do that, beware. It makes building the server, the service itself, if you want to have like duplex, where you have the server sending back events to the client, if you want to build something like that, you also have to start implementing your service in the asynchronous way, returning an async result, and that's far from easy to do. So I just want to warn you. But for the iSimplex session router, that's really easy. Okay, I was talking about configuration. Now, for this one, actually Microsoft didn't make configuration easier. They kind of made it harder to do. But most of the things you've done that before. So what I need to do here is I need to create a service, and I'm going to have an endpoint which is going to describe what kind of service, what kind of routing I want to do. For example, this is a request reply router. What I can then do is I need to add a behavior, and that behavior is going to point to a routing table. So I'm going to add the routing behavior, and that is going to point to a routing table, which will actually say, if you see something like this, go there. So what you need then to do is, of course, a list of clients. Go there, go there, go there. So you give it the list of clients, and these are really client-side endpoints, the same kind of endpoints you would see on your client. And then almost forgot. What you will see, however, is that the contract here, if you want to, you can specify the contract, but you can also say any contract. That's the difference. So that's the only difference you will see there. And then finally, you have your routing table. Now, your routing table is really a matching thing saying go to that client. Now, to do that, you will build a message filter. Now, message filters have been part of WCF since the beginning, since WCF 3. Actually, message filters, by default, are used by SOAP to see in the message, is the message, does it have this kind of action? Then I'm going to call this kind of method. So anybody ever built your own message filter? It's not too hard. Typically, what you need to do is you need to look for some stuff. But again, WCF4 comes with a whole range of inbuilt message filters. There's a message filter for looking for the SOAP action. But there's also a message filter which allows you to look inside your message, for example, to see if the company That's inside that message. If the company is your company, you want to go to that service. If it's another company, you might want to go to another service. You can do that one too. Okay. So, let's just have a look at a routing demo. And this is really a very simple one. And to be honest, come on, Visual Studio, star, give me, let's close the solution first. And then let's go back here and open up this one. What you'll find here is a very simple routing service. Now let me show you the coder. It basically is a main which hosts a routing service using a service host. And that's it. And all the rest is in configuration. By the way, if you want to, you can also look at the coder here. And then in the configuration itself, what you find in here is a little bit messy. What you find here, first of all, is the service itself being hosted at this base address, and it has two endpoints, one for metadata exchange and one regular endpoint listening at this address, at the router address. And it's saying, I'm this kind of router. I'm a request reply router. There's, of course, also a behavior being used here, routing data. And this routing data behavior really points to the routing table. And if you look down here, here's the routing table. The routing table is really saying, if you see any request, send it over there to the other service. So this is really the client. So what happens in this really, 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 really simple example, all the requests really get simply sent through to another one. But what I could do now is I could add multiple clients and then add multiple filters here and then just select. By the way, filters, they come in all kind of varieties. So if you click on this, you can see here the different kind of filters. Come on, let's go back here. Let's try that again. You can filter for action. You can filter for example, using XPath. You can filter for anything. This one will match anything you want and others. And if you want, you can have your custom filters. You can combine filters. Okay, let's remove this one, otherwise my demo won't work anymore. Now, what the client is going to do, the client is really going to talk to this address. And then the router will simply reroute it to the real service. So just to show you I'm not cheating, the client here has an endpoint address somewhere. Come on, where is that again? So let's create a calculator client, and in its configuration, you can find the endpoint going to the router. Okay. And then the service is really a simple calculator service. Like I said, I forgot to mention, this sample is really one of the WCF samples you can simply download from Microsoft. So if you want to play with this, you can also find other samples in there that will show you more advanced message filters. Okay, let's try that. So I'm going to start my service, calculator service, start this one first using the buffer. I'm then going to start my router. And if I put these two on top of one another, so you can see this is the real service running, this is the router, and then let's have the client start. So the client is now going to talk to my server, and in the beginning, it takes a while. That is because it is first talking to the router, and then the router is figuring things out, and then it starts to talk to the service, which then needs to figure things out. So the first time, this takes, a couple of seconds. Come on. Time to drink. Or should I do like some other people do? Saw that session? Great session. If you didn't, you okay. Come on. I forgot to press enter. Stupid me. End of tech days. Almost. So if I do that again, you see now that the router is completely configured, so it finds my service quite easily. Okay. If you want to avoid this kind of gap, what you can do is you can pre-start your services now in IIS 7.5. Make that run faster. Okay. So that was routing. So routing will look for me for a service, but I still need to have a router. Wouldn't it even be nicer not to have a router? Wouldn't it be nicer to have a service and a client, and the client simply saying, hey, I need somebody who can do this for me, and then the service says, yes, I can do that for you. Well, that is actually what is called WS Discovery. So WS Discovery is really a way to make your services and your clients find each other. Now, in that aspect, there are two kind of varieties. There's the variety that works over intranet using UDP, and there's also the variety that works over the internet, where you're actually going to have somebody who's going to be the mediator between the client and the services. Somebody will still need to be like your yellow pages. And basically what happens is when the service starts, it simply tells, and this is a standard way of doing that, this is WS Discovery, it's just going to say, hey, I'm here. Hello, I'm here. And then the client a little later moment can say, hey, I need somebody who can do something for me, and it's going to send criteria. Now, the cool thing is these criteria can be anything. The default criteria is I need this kind of service contract. But you could also send out other criteria. So the client is going to send the criteria, and on the internet, then the discovery service is going to say, hey, anybody know can do something with these criteria? The discovery service is actually going to call all the services that have registered and going to say, can you do that? And then those that do, they will get back and they will call back the client saying, hey, talk to me. And then at the end, when the service is ready, I can just say bye, and then, well, the client will have to find somebody else to do their work. That's basically how it works. But it also works on the intranet, and then it's really easy. What you just do is you create a service, and let me show you. You create a service with the UDP endpoint, the discovery endpoint, and then the client simply says, look for me for somebody who can do this kind of stuff using criteria. So like I said, you have the ad hoc mode, and you have the managed mode. Ad hoc uses UDP. Managed mode simply works over internet using standard protocols. But it needs a special discovery proxy for that. So again, let's take a very simple example here. I'm going to take this one, which is the basic discovery example from the SDK. And what you get here is a service and a client. And really, the only thing this service does, it exposes its endpoint. So it says, I want to have a service, calculator service, with this kind of endpoint. And then I would like you to add a service endpoint, which is the UDP discovery endpoint. This is really the kind, the standard endpoint it's adding with a discovery behavior as well. So I just need to add two more lines of code to make my service discoverable. Okay. And then the client side, what does that need to do? The client side simply says, I need an endpoint, and I need anybody who can simply satisfy for me this iCalculator service. Could you find it for me, please? So then WS Discovery will look for it using this protocol. It will look for any endpoint that has this kind of protocol, and then if it finds it, you can do stuff. If it cannot, after a little while, you get back nothing here, and then you know, well, something went wrong. Okay, again, let's try this. So I can just start my service. To be honest, really easy, this one. Come on, debug an instance. So this starts the service. Let's start the client as well. So now I have both. So the client, the first thing is now doing is saying, anybody out there? So my server says, yeah, I'm here. And then the client simply makes the call, and they have found each other. So really easy. In the managed version, then you get into, well, a little bit more misery. You have to set up a little bit more stuff and so on. Again, if you want to look into more details, I didn't want to definitely bore you with all those kind of gory details to have a managed service out there, but it's mainly configuration again. Okay. So, what else? REST. Who is not familiar with REST? Everybody knows REST? Who is familiar with REST? Maybe I should pose it that way. So nobody, okay. All the rest says, okay, I'm too tired to lift my hand. Okay. I can understand that. REST is really building services with nothing but HTTP. It's really about building services with verbs like HTTP GET. Now, you know HTTP GET because that's the stuff your browser does to fetch a page of the internet. And if you want to do things like updates and deletes, you use other verbs like POST and DELETE. So with REST, it's kind of easy to work with because the only thing you need as a client to talk to a REST service is just an HTTP stack. And that's why it's getting very popular. A lot of people using Silverlight are using REST. A lot of people using AJAX are using REST, together with JSON, by the way, to make things talk. I know people who have been spending hours and hours building an appropriate SOAP message just to be able to talk to a SOAP server in JavaScript. And anybody who has done that, come on, it's no fun, right? It's boring work. There are tools that help, but REST makes that easier. Now, one of the two things they did in WCF4, you can already quite easily build a REST service in WCF3, but in WCF4 they made it even easier to add two things, help and caching. Caching, well, when you use HTTP GET, caching, doing that kind of makes sense. You can simply say, hey, I'm a server, here's an answer, and web server, could you keep that answer for the next hour, so don't bother me anymore. If anybody needs the answer, it's there, you have it for the next hour. So you can do that one too. Now, in WCF3, you could do that, but again, it was a little bit gory. You would have to twiddle a little bit with HTTP and stuff. So they made that easier. But let's first have a look at help. One of the cool things about SOAP is WSDL, the web service description line, which all max endpoints. It has metadata. You can just walk up to a SOAP endpoint and say, what can you do for me? And it will nicely explain to you what it can do using standards. Now, one of the things that is still missing with REST is a real standard for REST services to describe themselves. So what it really comes down to is, and that's kind of the annoying bit about REST, as a developer, you actually have to go to the website and try to figure out how it works. So they wanted to make it easier to give us help. So now, by just adding a couple of attributes and switching one property, you can enable help on WCF services. And it looks a little bit like this. So it's going to say, hey, I can do for you I can do for you with this URI a GET and with this URI a POST. So you can do stuff like GET stuff and update stuff. And if you then want to look at more details, you can find here, for example, that the request, you don't need to send it a request, but it can send you back a response using XML or using JSON or maybe other protocols. So at least now I know that if I go to this service and I do a GET with this URI, that it can send back to me stuff using XML or stuff using JSON. By the way, how does that work? There's an action verb. Sorry, there's the action part of an HTTP request, and then you can say, I would like to have JSON or XML or stuff. Now, they made that easier too, by the way. So your REST service can now automatically detect what is the kind of the format of the contents it needs to return, and then do that automatically for you too. Okay, but that's a little bit. Some of these things are quite gory details. Okay, let's have a look at that. How do you add help? Well, you just add a description attribute. That's it. By the way, if you want to build REST services, what you need to do too is you need to apply these WebGET and WebInvoke attributes on your service contract. By the way, you should also have there an operation contract. So this way you can tell it that you want to do a GET, and this way you can tell it you want to do a POST. Okay. If you want to have help, WCF doesn't give you that by default. What you need to do is you just need to change the web HTTP and say that you want to give it help. You want to have help enabled. You can do that in configuration, in Colder, or you can simply use the web service host as well. If you want to have caching, that is also enabled. But again, for that, they use ASP.NET. They simply use the ASP.NET output caching mechanism. So REST will simply tell ASP.NET, cache this for me. It works just as normal, except you want to make sure that you vary by param and vary by header, the accept verb here. So this one says, I'll keep the answer for the next 60 seconds. Let's have a look at that. Before I forget. What you also need to do then on your merit is you need to give it this ASP.NET cache profile attribute saying, there's a profile, cache me like that. which also makes it easier, of course, then to change in configuration the way that the caching should work. Okay, another thing, if you want to throw errors, you now have a web fault exception where you can give it a caller, HTTP status caller not found, HTTP status caller something else, instead of having to figure out 401 or 30, something like that. So less misery with error callers. Okay, let's have a quick look at this. This is actually a demo which is 3-in-1. Oops, let's go here. Well, I should also open this one. I'm getting a nice bunch of things here. So the first thing here is the help one. So what I do here is I just add a description attribute on my methods. This will explain what the method does. There's more to help, of course. What I can then do is I can go to configuration and tell it that the web HTTP endpoint by default that I want to have help enabled. Again, I could migrate that up in my server so all my REST services automatically get this. And that's it. So if I run this, it's currently listening at this address. Sorry. Let me try it another way. So you can have a slightly bigger font here. I'm going to mark it. Get this endpoint. Open the browsers. Put some stuff in here. Okay, some more typing for me. It's not that difficult. So I have an address 8000. If I hit this, you get your page looking like this. Okay. Previously in WCF3, you would just say endpoint not found. Now it says, well, there's no endpoint here, but if you want to, you can click on this thing, and I'll take you to a help page. So this is really the help URI. So I could also have type in here help. And then I get like all my methods. So I have these two methods here, and I can click on this method, for example, post. This is a little bit more interesting, which will show me that if I want to, I can send it a request using XML and then maybe get back a response using XML or JSON or stuff like this. And then you get a couple of examples here. So it should make it easier to build a service this way. But still, you have to figure out all the formats yourself. So there's still no whistle to work with this kind of thing. Okay. Let's close this. I don't need it anymore. And let's go for this one. Now, this is, again, a REST service. Now, implementing the CRUD operations, create, read, update, delete of customers. So I can add a customer here, for example, using a post. I can delete a customer, and I can also ask it, give me a list of all the customers. So I have this get list of customers method. By the way, if you're doing this with REST, you don't get to have to write any special stuff about how to do the formatting. So I can just create a little list here. Now, the demo itself, it also uses two things. The endpoint itself here does not require you to use a .svc. This is really the endpoint I'm using. So how does it do that? No SVC. It just uses the ASP.NET routing methodology, the routing technique you have. So what you'll find here is a global.asax. And this one simply says, well, I want you to create for me a routing table, and in the routing table, when they go for customers, I actually want you to go here using the web service host factory to this service. That's it. So no SVC required anymore. Okay. What it also does is, of course, it has here a caching profile. So I have an output cache settings here, which says cache this for 60 seconds, vary by param format, vary by header accept, that kind of stuff. So it will just keep stuff for the next 60 seconds. Now, the idea of the demo is it's going to just create two customers. It's going to get a list of customers. It's then going to delete the customer, and then within the next minute, you will still see two customers, and then after 1 minute, you get one customer less. So let's try this. So I'm just going to start the service here. Come on. Again, really cool if you have a really big font. So, starting my service. And then just start the client. And let's zoom in a bit here. So what it does here is it first is adding a couple of customers. So it's adding here Alice. Come on, let me draw. So it's adding, again, same thing. So it's adding Alice here and Bob. So then it does a get list. So it says here, okay, oh, sorry, it's Charlie and Bob. Then it deletes a customer. And then Charlie and Bob are still there. Now, if I make this run for a little bit longer, you'll get to see that if it gets stuff then, is that I'll suddenly have one less customer. Now, then you might be wondering, okay, that's all cool that I can do output caching, but if somebody then deletes, can I then, like, tell the output cache not to cache anymore? Of course you can. You can do that in ASP.NET. You can also do that in WCF. You can easily, if you bing that on the web, you can easily find that. Yeah, see? Yeah. So there's just Charlie anymore after 1 minute of caching. Now, after 1 minute, the cache has been cleared out. Okay. So that's the way you can do caching. So I showed you how to do without the SMX using the routing, and I showed you how to do the caching here by just adding a cache profile, and then in your implementation, you just refer to the caching profile. So here, I'm just referring back to that caching profile. Okay. Next. What is also new in WCF 4 is Workflow 4. And now you might be thinking, huh, how is that possible? Well, actually, what they did is they built a new workflow foundation completely based starting from WCF. And this is now a very nice way for building services. Because a couple of things, if you want to do that with the service yourself, it's fairly hard to do that yourself. One of the things is really tracking what happened in your service. If you have a workflow is really a collection of activities, and then workflow will execute these activities one after another. Workflow can quite easily write tracking records between each of the steps it has taken, which makes it easier to add tracking. And that's why Microsoft also added something called Dublin, or now it's called App Fabric, to make it easier to look at those tracking records. So you can just run a service and then simply say, hey, what happened? And then can literally see what was happening by using that kind of extension. What it can also do is it can make your services durable. Anybody ever built a durable service with WCF 3, 3.5? Well, with 3.5, you could do that. Actually, the way it would work is you would actually use the workflow 3 database to make workflow foundation storage stuff in that database. And what you would do is you would say durable operation. You would add attributes. Again, with workflow, it's easier. And now what I can also do is I can build a service without a single line of code. And then I can also do other stuff like correlation. By the way, if you're going to build a WCF service using workflow, you'll get this kind of project. Instead of a .svc, you get a XAMLX file. And inside the XAMLX file, what do you think you'll find in there? XAML, of course, XAML. This is becoming a very important language for all kinds of things. It's already being used by Silverlight, by WPF, by Workflow, and now also by WCF. And that's all. What you find in web.config, if you're lucky, a couple of default settings for WCF. So again, this really relies on WCF. The default endpoints, the default behavior, the default bindings, and so on and so on and so on. What you can also do is to add correlation. Again, what is correlation? Correlation is you send out the message to somebody, and they send you back a response. Now, it's easy if you just send out a single message, because then you're only expecting one response. But what if you're sending out thousands of messages? What if you're a company like Belgacom who needs to send out thousands of bills at the end of the month, and then they get a payment? How do they know from who came that payment? Well, when they send out the bill, they give you a reference number, and when you send back that reference number, they know it's from this bill. You can do that too with Workflow. But in Workflow 4, they made it easier. If you wanted to do that in Workflow 3, if you wanted to call a Workflow service, you would actually have to use context bindings. Remember? Anybody ever do that? The idea of the context binding, it was a way of making the identity of the workflow. You could have several hundreds workflows running on a single machine. Then if you would call a workflow, you get back the identity of your workflow, and then it could send it back to the workflow and say, hey, I want to continue with this workflow. but it would require a special context binding, which would not make it easy to use that from Silverlight, for example, because they don't have context binding. And in workflow 4, you can just say, this property of my message, use that to do the correlation. So I have here like an identifier, somebody's name, Janneke. I want you to use Janneke, and then when I'm going to send you a next message, use Janneke to find the same workflow that I used before for Janneke. That's content-based correlation. You also have that now in workflow. I'm not going to show you how to build that kind of stuff. I did that yesterday, and if you want to try that, I've put on my blog a little article explaining you how to build that yourself. But I just want to show you quickly how that works, and also do that together with App Fabric to show you a little bit more about that. So anybody who was here yesterday for my session on Workflow 4, I'm sorry, it's going to be very similar. So you can bail out if you want. Not everybody at the same time, okay? Let's have a quick look. What I did here, and let's close a couple of things. What I did here is I'm going to take the one I used yesterday. This is one I built live yesterday. So this is really a workflow with just a XAMLX file here. And if you want to look at this, you can look at this with XML. Come on. And then you see that this is really purely XAML. One of the big advantages of this XAML is it makes it easier to update workflows. You might be calling libraries, but you won't be updating those libraries as often. But anybody who's been working with workflow knows that if you have a new workflow, you get all kinds of versioning issues. With Workflow 4, the workflow is actually a XAML file. So you could, it makes it easier to upload workflows and stuff and communicate workflows. I can actually build a service that could send me a client, a workflow. I could execute the workflow and then just continue working well. And the next time I would use that, the service could send me another workflow. It's simply a string. It's simply XML. So that's kind of cool. So here, again, we have an example of Colder, but as data, or data as Colder. Okay. Now, if I want to execute this workflow, and this is the one I built live yesterday, let me also show you how it looks like a little bit. I can build a workflow by drawing stuff. And this is also more readable for business users. And I can then, for example, say here, I'm going to start. And then after starting, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to wait for a request to come in. That's what you would do in WCF as well. And then when I get the request, I'm going to do some stuff. So I'm going to do a couple of steps here. And these are really simple assignments. And I'm going to send you back a response. So these two things build a response message. But then I'm going to wait for another request. And this is a request which requires you to send the first request, and then the next request, I'm going to wait for that, I'm going to do stuff, and this is really a little number guessing game. So I'm going to, when you call me, I want to have a new game, I'm going to think of a number, and then you can send me, is it 50, is it that, is it that, is it that, and each time you do that, I'm going to tell you, too small, too big, all right, you got it. So this is really the workflow to do that. I'm using for this the new workflow model called Flowchart, which is also more, again, business-wise, more makes more sense. I can simply build this in Visual Studio, and then I can deploy this in IIS. So the way I did this yesterday is I created a deployment package. That's something new in Visual Studio 2010. It's something that allows you to build, well, to deploy your whole website, even with your databases, or deploy your service, or your WCF service, or your workflow service by doing a single click. So I can just say, build this thing for me. And then I went to IIS. I'm not going to do all the steps again. But in IIS, I can then simply go here. And I've installed App Fabric. And in App Fabric, then you can tell it to, for example, deploy an application. And I just go for the file that was created in Visual Studio. And I can just import it here in IIS. So as a developer, it's also going to be easier to give somebody like an IT pro your application. You package it, you send them, it's really a zip file, so you send them a zip file, and then they take the zip file, and then they can just get it in there. Now, what I can also do here is I can then work with services. So if you click on this thing, for example, you see a couple of new things, especially this stuff. The App Fabric dashboard, the list of the endpoints, and the list of the services. Instead of having to configure my services with WCF config or hand edit the config file, I can also change my configuration from within here. I can just double click on this and then change stuff on my endpoints. But this is also quite interesting. If I double click on this, it's going to show me an overview. And I need to zoom in, zoom out a little bit more. It's going to show me an overview of all the services that have been running on my machine and what they've been doing. So for example, I can see here that I have like zero active, but there's one workflow which is still idle. I think I forgot to complete a workflow yesterday, but to be honest, I forgot the name of to work with that, so I forgot the key. Well, otherwise I could just continue with this. I can also look at how many that had errors. I made one crash. And then I can see how many that were activated, and I can click on this. And then it's going to run a little query, and it's going to tell me there's a service here. And then I can also ask it, show me, for example, all the tracked events from this service, what happened in my service. And then here it says, well, there was some activity. And if I go from bottom to top, and I make this scroll to the right a little bit, it's going to tell me that, well, I created a new game. I did the assign. That was a little assign shape, something more. I send back a response, so the new game was started. Then a player guesses stuff. Then I have some code executing. Kind of strange in workflow, the code you write in there, you can just write code as strings, and there's a special VB engine that will execute that code for you. Yes, VB. Microsoft is going to add to that a C# library to also allow you to write C# in workflows, but for the moment it's VB. I mainly think that's because VB is more English-like. So it's going to be easier for non-developers to read VB. Any non-developer who sees curly braces starts to run, right? So then I can actually see what is happening here, step by step. So it said here last time that the number I was trying to guess was too small. So you can see that here. And then I can zoom in here and try to figure out more and more stuff. So this is kind of cool. So let me just try to run a little service here so you can get an idea. I'm actually going to browse to this. And what happens if you build a workflow service declaratively, if you have metadata, I can just go here. And then I can build any client. And I'm going to use this thing here again to build a client. And then talk to my service. Now what you see is I get my endpoint. And I have two contracts here, each with their own binding. This one is basic, this one is net named pipe, but you can use any binding you want. I can create a new game. Let's take somebody's name. Let's take Ann. It doesn't always have to be men, right? And I'm going to start a new game. So Ann is going to start a new game. And then I can actually use the other protocol. I can use named pipe binding here, for example, to try to do a guess. Why? Because I've done content-based correlation. So the workflow is now waiting, but any endpoint that has this request, it will say, hey, Ann wants to guess. And then the workflow engine will say, hey, whose workflow is that? Okay, it's that workflow. Loads that back into memory, by the way. And then just makes it continue. So let's try to have a little guess for Ann here. And I need to send Ann then, well, Ann needs to use here a special record, a special message, which has the name Ann. And then a number, let's make that 50. And then just hit invoke, and then I'll get back too small. Try bigger. Now, another really interesting thing here is what will happen if I do an IIS reset? What will happen to your service when you do an IIS reset and that service is still doing stuff? Or it's waiting for things to happen? IIS gets killed, so your service gets killed, so your code gets killed, so you lose all your stuff unless you've persisted that to a database. So what workflow actually does here, each time I do something, workflow writes stuff to a database. It says, I'm here, and this is the stuff I have. So it saves everything it needs to know to the database. By the way, in a way more efficient way than workflow 3 used to do. So if I hit IIS reset, and then IIS has come back up, I can actually continue with my workflow. I just have to be a little bit patient. The first time I did this demo, I was not patient enough, so my application didn't want to work anymore. I was like, oh, what's going on? But then after 2 more minutes, after talking a little bit more, and then this is the only time I knew by talking that I could solve a problem, okay, there it is. Oh, no, it's attempting to start, almost there. So let's give that a little bit more time. So let's watch my disk activity. just to make sure, I'm going to go back to IIS here. I'm going to try to refresh it. And let's have a look here. Now, I think everything's running, application pools. I'm actually using this application pool, so that's good. Ah, okay. Let's try one more guess. So last guess was, it says too small, try bigger. So let's do that, 75. Let's hit invoke again. Ah, I have to be a little bit more patient. Let's try once more. I really have to be more patient now. Yesterday this went like nothing. Let's hit this just to see if everything's being loaded. Okay. Once more. Still not. Okay, let's try this one. So, on is the name. And then 75. Let's try that. Ah, okay, it's still too small. So let's try another one. What's between 75 and 100? That's like 87. Not big enough still. 93, let's try that one. Okay, so it's between those two, 90. 88. Now I have just two choices, I think. 89, and I should be there. Okay. So now my game is completely being played. Now, by the way, I can now go back here, refresh this thing, and then after seeing this, I should see that I have one completion today. So that one went fine, and then I can look at everything again. So that's App Fabric for you. Okay. So that's the last bit of my session. I left out some of the more gory, deep down stuff. So there's a couple of other improvements. One of those is ETW tracing, which is a very efficient kind of way of making WCF trace stuff to very low level Windows service, and so on. But any questions? None? I don't see anybody raising their hand. More? No questions? Okay. Then I wish you a pleasant evening and hope to see you soon. And if you have special questions, come down. I'll be here a little while.